your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off this hour, this weekend, with the Dr. Sandra Husbands. She's head of health official for Hackney Borough and the City of London. And this actually comes right off the City of London site. And I'll tell you how important it is after she tells us how, in glowing terms, how certified and checked out these vaccines are. Here we go next.
Hello, I'm Dr. Sandra Husbands, Director of Public Health for the City of London and Hackney. I want to encourage everyone, if you're invited to get the COVID vaccine, to take up the offer and get the vaccine. The vaccines are safe and they're effective. If you're contacted by your GP or by a letter from the NHS, please book and have your vaccine. The vaccines are safe. I've had mine. So I know that some people might be concerned that they think that the vaccines were made in a rush, but I just want to reassure you that all of the vaccines that are in use in the UK have all been through the same rigorous scientific processes. Researchers from all over the world and all these different pharmaceutical companies working together in a way that they never have before. Normally you have to wait to get decisions made and get funding approved. All those decisions was all done up front because we knew that we needed the vaccine. As the trials were going on, we're releasing some of the information along the way to the Medicines and Healthcare Regulatory Agency, or MHRA. So they had the opportunity to make sure that the trials were being carried out in an appropriate way, but they had information up front, and so they were able to make the approval really quickly. And that's why we were able to get these vaccines developed, made and approved very quickly and released for use in the public. But they're just as safe as your flu vaccine or any other vaccine that you would normally take.
The reason I played this at the beginning of this first hour is this is a very dangerous period that we're entering. You could almost describe it as the second American Revolution, because this announcement was on the City of London site, which is an entity unto itself. It's a private corporation. But by them putting this announcement on there by their top health official, they're stating that we need this vaccine, and we know there's real problems with this these vaccines. And so people are getting their backs up on this, and they're not going for this like I believe they shouldn't just roll over and take these without a lot further research and a lot further checking out. She says it's safe and everything else. Don't believe that. This is really dangerous, and this is coming from the top leadership of the UK, the top money powers in the world. So this is dangerous for America, this what we're involved with now. So next comes up Hannity. Last Friday, he talked about what's going on there in Afghanistan and Kabul. You know, they're trying to get those people out. And right now, I think the latest is they've evacuated 17,000 people, and of which about 2,500 are American citizens, and the rest, 14,500, are Afghanis, as I understand it. But there have been incidents of Americans being beaten. Now, I think there's been a Chinook or two that's gone out and rescued some of our Americans and picked them up and flew them back to the Kabul airport. So, and there's other reports too of American University interceding in some way over there of helping Americans get out. I don't have any further details on that, but you can check it out on Fox and so forth. But anyway, here's what Hannity had to say about this Kabul fiasco last night.
And welcome to Hannity this Friday night. Americans held hostage behind enemy lines. This is day six, and there is sadly, we can report no end in sight tonight. A month ago in July, Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, he was warned directly 5 weeks ago by 23 top diplomats inside of Afghanistan that the fall of Kabul was in fact imminent. The Biden administration ignored that dire warning, and here we are in this situation at this hour, where thousands of Americans, tens of thousands of our Afghan allies are in extreme danger. Their lives are at risk. Many of these allies will be murdered if they are left behind. And the worst part of all is every bit of this was preventable. But the President of the United States, he has been completely checked out, missing in action. He ignored every clear warning that this was all going to occur. In a press conference earlier today, Joe Biden once again showed his true colors, repeatedly told outright lies to you, the American people. Man without character, career politician, clearly no moral compass, withering, decrepit shell of a human being who puts his own priorities, obviously, above those fellow Americans abroad. And until midday today, Joe's plans were to go back on vacation in Delaware until he was pretty much shamed into staying at the White House for the weekend. The reality for the country is this. We really don't have a president seemingly aware and capable of leading. Just watch Joe Biden lie again and again today. Take a look.
As we continue to work the logistics of evacuation, we're in constant contact with the Taliban, working to ensure civilians have safe passage to the airport.
Safe passage to the airport. Please tell me he's not serious, because his own State Department sent a memo to those trapped in Afghanistan again today, reiterating, quote, the U.S. government cannot ensure your safe passage to the airport. Oh, and the gates might change from time to time. Maybe Joe didn't read his own State Department memo. And look at this. In a briefing call with lawmakers, Lloyd Austin said Americans have been beaten by the Taliban in Kabul outside of the airport. Some were beaten with rubber fan belts. Joe Biden clearly lied. His own State Department and his own Defense Department are highlighting these lies. The Taliban is absolutely not allowing safe passage. Watch with your own eyes.
The president said he has no intelligence that Americans have been unable to get there. The question, obviously, does that square with reporting on the ground?
I mean, just totally not.
I don't think so that I can leave here because not allowing anyone to go inside.
The most intense part was getting into the airport itself. It was just heartbreaking. People pushing, scrambling, crying, screaming, children crying out.
I don't have his money!
If you can't get in, you're obviously then a hostage behind enemy lines. Look at this headline, quote, CNN, ABC, NBC, Fox News correspondents fact-check Biden on Afghanistan evacuations. The reality and the rhetoric are miles apart. Our very own Jennifer Griffin said, quote, I'm having a hard time digesting what we heard because I couldn't fact-check it in fast enough in real time. What's the point of controlling the airport, Joe, if you can't control the perimeter? The people controlling the perimeter right now, that would be the Taliban. And if people can't get inside, how do we get them home? It is so sad that even Joe's friends in the liberal media cannot and will not be able to shield him from this crisis, and frankly, for good reason. Would you want your family in the middle of this? Forced to try and claw their way through several Taliban checkpoints in the midst of this utter chaos and count and depend on the goodwill of the Taliban? a terrorist organization to allow you to go to the airport when they're beating people? Today's State Department memo says we can't secure your safe passage to the airport and we can't guarantee what entry points will still be open. It is a nightmare. But the horrors don't end there. The lucky ones that have gotten past the Taliban beatings and the checkpoints and actually made it to the airport, they are then forced to wait for hours on end, trapped between the walls of the airport and the Taliban fighters that are surrounding the perimeter of the airport behind them. Others are forced to move from gate to gate to gate until they can find one that is actually open. The gates open and close at a moment's notice, and in between each gate is another Taliban checkpoint. According to reports, the Taliban are using these checkpoints. They are searching for anyone and everyone on their hit list. And to make matters even worse tonight, for over 8 hours today, not a single flight took off from that airport, Karzai International Airport. Not one. The primary reason for the holdup, only a handful of countries are now actually accepting our flights, including Qatar, which they are now saying are at full capacity. They do not have the capacity to take any more incoming flights. And meanwhile, the ever so compassionate Joe Biden is blocking Afghan refugees and their families from flying to the United States. I thought that was a promise to them that if it ever got this bad, we would get them out. They don't have to stay here forever, but we promise them to get them out because they will die. And get this, according to Joe Biden, all of our allies, every one of them, they're applauding his heroic leadership. Okay, another lie. Take a look.
I have seen no question of our credibility from our allies around the world. I've spoken with our NATO allies. We've spoken with NATO allies, the Secretary of State. Our national security advisor has been in contact with his counterparts throughout the world and our allies, as has the general, I keep calling him a general, but my Secretary of Defense. The fact of the matter is, I have not seen that. As a matter of fact, the exact opposite I've got. The exact opposite thing is we're acting with dispatch. We're acting, committing to what we said we would do.
Here's a headline for you, Joe, from the Telegraph, quote, British Parliament holds Joe Biden in contempt over Afghanistan. Here's another. NATO allies urge rethink on alliance after Biden's unilateral Afghanistan exit. And another. UK, French, German leaders blast Biden over Afghanistan. We thought America was back. Joe Biden abandoned our allies, our friends, our partners, and even our own fellow citizens in the middle of the night, frankly. But don't worry, according to Joe, little chaos was bound to happen. That was all factored into this, he said. And there's no reason for us to begin to be in the region because Al-Qaeda, he thinks, magically has disappeared. Perhaps nobody told them that they were released from prisons just days ago. Take a look.
Let's put this thing in perspective here. What interest do we have in Afghanistan at this point with Al-Qaeda gone? We went to Afghanistan for the express purpose of getting rid of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan as well as getting Osama bin Laden. And we did.
And today, Joe's own Pentagon said the exact opposite, that Al-Qaeda is very much alive and well in Afghanistan, working alongside their Taliban partners, and we don't even have an embassy presence or intel assets left to counter any threat. And now the Taliban may even, Al-Qaeda, has access to massive stockpiles, billions of dollars of sophisticated weaponry that we left behind because there was no contingency plan. Thousands of guns and armored vehicles. Yep, even Black Hawk military helicopters, night vision goggles, ammo uniforms, you name it, they got it all. Look at your screen. These Taliban fighters are now mocking the United States of America in their own propaganda, dressed up in gear taken that we left, that Joe left them from U.S. stockpiles. One notorious global terrorist was even pictured with a U.S. M4 rifle flanked by other terrorists wearing U.S. military gear from head to toe. There's no plan to recover our gear or weapons. There's no plan to get rid of them or destroy them. There isn't even a plan to rescue our fellow American citizens, yup, that are held behind enemy lines. Get to the airport, says Biden. Trust the Taliban. They've guaranteed safe passage, he's telling us. take your beatings, risk your life. We can't ensure your safety. That's his plan. That's it. The Taliban feared President Trump. They realized that their actions would have immediate and dire consequences. And as a result, no Americans were killed for well over a year in the last year of Donald Trump's presidency. Now, no one respects Joe Biden, not the Taliban, not our geopolitical foes, Russia, hostile regime, China, the mullahs in Iran. They're all watching. And guess what? Our allies don't even trust us at this point. And according to a breaking new report from Bloomberg, Biden promised G7 leaders the U.S. would keep a security presence in Afghanistan to keep Kabul safe and then utterly failed to keep that promise. Well, tonight, I always say, let not your heart be troubled. My heart is troubled. Our fellow Americans are in deep trouble tonight behind enemy lines. Our friends, our allies are in deep trouble behind enemy lines. You know, leave no man or woman behind. Well, Great Britain and France, to their credit, they sent in troops to Kabul to escort citizens from Kabul successfully to the airport. Why haven't we? We have the best military fighting force on the face of the earth. Yeah, Americans now can't get to the airport, held hostage, and they're behind enemy lines day six.
Let's just hope and pray it doesn't get worse over there. General Keane was interviewed after Biden's speech. One of the biggest gaffes he made was Al-Qaeda's no longer there in Afghanistan. And actually, those groups that were allied with Al-Qaeda and are, like you could say, synonymous with Al-Qaeda are in second in command, possibly with the Taliban. So Biden wasn't even accurate on that. His Defense Department contradicted his speech later. And they said, yeah, Al-Qaeda is still there. But anyway, here's General Keane, what he had to say after listening to President Biden's speech. Here we go next.
On the phone with us right now, General Jack Keane. General, you heard the president. You heard what he was saying, that this really would not have changed, and the inability of the Afghan government to ever get its act together would not have changed if this decision were 5 years ago or 15 years from now. What did you think of that?
Well, I thought the speech was largely defensive surrounding his decision and the chaos and the debacle that we're all seeing played out in front of us in defending that decision. And I would like to point out a couple of factual errors in those remarks that deal with, you know, his defense of his decision. When he's saying that the Afghans, you know, are not willing to fight, that's not telling the whole story. Since the Afghans have been fighting the ground war in Afghanistan since 2014, and we've been providing air support and intelligence, and in other words, enablers for them to do that, they have suffered over 50,000 casualties. And in every one of those 7 years, they have pushed back successfully on the Taliban offensive that's occurred every year at a cost to themselves. What happened this year is the United States said to the Afghan security forces and to their government that we are no longer willing to support your efforts. We are pulling away from you. And as a result of that, that had incredibly adverse impact on them, knowing full well that would be the first time that they've ever not had air support and robust intelligence to enable their fighting. The Afghans have fought in the past. They are not a strong military by any means, and anyone who's been in Afghanistan knows that. But with U.S. enablers, what we were able to achieve is a stalemate, imperfect to be sure. Yes, there's a government that could be much better than what it is. But that stalemate is simply this. The Afghans cannot defeat the Taliban, even with U.S. air support and even with considerably more troops when we had U.S. forces there. But the Taliban cannot also defeat the Afghan government. And that imperfect stalemate and status quo has enabled us to continue to protect the American people. Why? Because the Taliban are not taking over the country, and we can make certain that the Al-Qaeda does not resurrect itself, because we had CIA presence and U.S. forces and significant intelligence capability to attract all of that. So it's inaccurate to say that the Taliban are not willing. We pulled the plug on them, and they collapsed. That's a fact. The second thing that is, I think, very important to understand here is the president is presenting a false choice to us. and he's misrepresenting what was recommended to him. And that false choice is what no one recommended to him, to put thousands of additional forces in to fight the Taliban. The recommendation to him was to maintain the 2,500 forces that were there on our intelligence capability and air power, to continue to sustain that over time and continue to protect the American people from a resurgence of the Al-Qaeda. The Afghan study group report that came out last year, a bipartisan study group, notable senators on it from both sides of the aisle, to include Michelle Flournoy, who is President Obama's defense policy undersecretary, they recommended a force of 4,500 to stay. And if we didn't stay, it's likely the Taliban will take over and the Al-Qaeda will return. Now, about the Al-Qaeda and minimizing the Al-Qaeda threat, there's a UN report that came out just recently within the last few weeks based on their members' intelligence services providing input to them. It's an unclassified report that says the Al-Qaeda has presence in somewhere between 10 to 15 provinces in Afghanistan today, and that presence is being shielded and protected by the Taliban. So the threat is there. We don't want that threat rising to the point where it's be dangerous to the United States. And I think those are serious factual misrepresentations. One last thing. The president says that the threat is in Eastern Africa, it's in Yemen, and it's in Iraq and Syria. And he's absolutely right about it. This is the radical Islamist threat represented by ISIS and by Al-Qaeda. Those four places, every one of those organizations has aspirations to attack the United States. The reason why some of his foreign policy advisors, both civilian and military, want to keep a presence in Afghanistan is because we believe that the Al-Qaeda that is in Afghanistan and the Al-Qaeda that could resurge and grow in Afghanistan would be a threat to the United States also. And that is the logic and the rationale behind what was taken. I also believe I would have liked to have heard from the president as dealing with the emergency evacuation that's taken place, the horror show that we're all watching. I would have liked to have seen a very strong, determined commitment from him that we will complete this evacuation, not just the thousands of Americans and other foreign nationals who are there, or in other words, are mostly our European allies, and help that evacuation, but we will complete the evacuation of the thousands of Afghans whose lives are in jeopardy, that are on lists that the Taliban have and are currently going door to door to try to find those people. Those people, many of them are at the airport, or we can get to that airport, we should be absolute commit the military to finish that exercise, not just American civilians and other foreign nationals, but the Afghan people whose lives are absolutely on the line.
Boy, that was something else. That was General Keane. And anyway, the Al-Qaeda's back in there. But anyway, next is an interview that Harrison Smith had with Zach Voorhees, the Google whistleblower. And he had some very interesting things to say about these algorithms they're employing to fathom out and to exclude and to censor information or people or individuals or events or ideas or concepts that they disagree with, because they're out there for social justice, but not for truth. Here we go next with that interview.
It's the media that's led us into every single war in my history, and it was all on false pretenses. Like, look at it's like the people that drove us into the disastrous, Iraq war twice, and the Afghanistan war were the ones that were complaining about Trump. It's like, I don't care what you guys have to say at all. You're murderers and thugs.
Right.
Right.
And that, and that actually goes to explain why they would want to shut people like you up, why they'd want to shut people like us up. I mean, it's the same people manipulating the Google algorithm that are getting us into these wars. Same impetus, same, volition that drives both these groups to do what they do. More on the other side. We're about to go to break. More on the other side with Zach Voorhees, his newest book where all of this is detailed, his escape from the cave of Google. Google Leaks, a whistleblower's expose of big tech censorship. You know, Google's motto used to be, don't be evil. Now their motto is, well, it's not that. I don't know what it is, but they changed it, and it's not that anymore. I guess what I'm saying is, Google is evil. Google is evil. Google is evil. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. The third hour of American Journal on Infowars.com and Band.video. My guest this hour, you know him well. I covered the story on Monday, some of the latest revelations that he's made. His name is Zach Voorhees. He's a whistleblower, a former software engineer for Google. He worked on multiple projects at Google for over 8 years, and while developing software at YouTube, Zach Voorhees learned that Google was censoring what they deemed was fake news and investigated further into the company. He found that not only had Google defined fake news to mean actual events that had happened, but also had created an artificial intelligence system to classify all available data to Google search. The reason Google wanted to classify all the data was that they could use their AI system to re-rank the entire internet according to Google's corporate cultural values. And in 2019, Zach Voorhees resigned from Google and blew the whistle to inform the public about Google's extensive censorship program. Zach Voorhees has since been fighting against censorship. He's the co-author of the new book, Google Leaks, a whistleblower's expose of big tech censorship. His website, ZachVoorhees.com, and his Twitter is at Perpetual Maniac. Thank you so much for coming on and being here on American Journal this morning, Zach.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Well, very good to talk to you, and I'm very excited about this new book, Google Leaks, a whistleblower's expose of big tech censorship. Can you tell us what people can expect to find in this latest release?
Yeah, so this book goes into how I blew the whistle on Google, what I found inside of Google's internal servers, and how I got this into the hands of Project Veritas so that they could do their expose on big tech censorship and how Google was censoring you.
Mm. And, you know, obviously this is of the utmost importance. I think the InfoWars audience is probably one of the most well-versed on this entire topic, the idea that, you know, once you have enough information, you can actually start changing inputs and manipulate what happens in the real world. I mean, we're not just talking about manipulating the internet here. This has real world consequences and essentially gives Google veto power over any politician or any movement that they deem as unnecessary or fake news. I mean, this is incredibly powerful psychological weaponry in the hand of very few unaccountable and really unknown people, isn't it?
It is. And what's interesting is that Google promised to the American people that they would not do political censorship. They testified to Congress under oath that they would not do political censorship. They swore to their stockholders when they went IPO that they would not engage in political censorship. But as soon as the wrong president was democratically elected, they threw all that away in order to bring about this new system called machine learning fairness, which I go about in my book. And in that system, they decided that they were going to re-rank everything that's on the internet because their theory was, is that people themselves are racist and therefore they produce racist data. And if that racist data is fed into these giant AI systems, then the AI itself becomes racist and the feedback loop begins again. And so Google sat out to recorrect all of this racist data that we create by re-ranking the internet, and in the hopes that not only could they have like a clean AI, but that also they could gently nudge us to the direction of this leftist church that's been, you know, building within globalism now for decades.
Right. Right. And to me, this is, it's so obviously dangerous. Let's try to sort of piece out why this is dangerous, right? Because one example that they had, and I'm not sure if this was Google or another, but they would enter in information about prisoners, and the AI was supposed to determine, give prisoners a score as to how likely they would be to reoffend should they be let out of prison. And one of the things that they noticed was that the algorithm was assigning the black prisoners a lower score, saying they were more likely to reoffend. And the conclusion of this was the algorithm is racist, so they go in to change the algorithm to make it not racist. But really what that means is they're taking a conclusion that the algorithm got from pure, simple data, and they're manipulating the way it interprets that data to serve some sort of social purpose, which means these algorithms that are deciding things for us that are unquestionable, and well, it's the algorithm, so, you know, we just have to accept the answer, but the algorithms themselves are being manipulated on ideological lines, right? I mean, it's subtle, but incredibly powerful and dangerous in the wrong hands, or even in the right hands with ill intention, you know, with good intentions, incredibly catastrophic outcomes. Is that more or less what's happening here?
Yeah. And the thing is that, you know, if you assume that all different outcomes are based upon racism, sexism, and you don't allow for any variability in, you know, the human creature, which is varied and wonderful in all of its manifestations. And if you don't allow for those differences, then you're going to see everything through the lens of oppression and racism and sexism. And that's not the way it is. Like, and you, it's clear that this is the way that it is. We don't go to school teachers and say, hey, how come there isn't more men in preschool and kindergarten? Like, this is obviously a sexism driving men out of kindergarten,
right,
you know, teaching positions. That just doesn't happen, right? But in certain positions, it does. And those positions are always political. And I saw this at Google with their with the way that Google would message that they didn't have enough female, you know, engineers.
Right.
And they said, well, it's because of our bias. And one of the interesting things that they did is that they took away all the gender cues from their resumes that they were evaluating. What they found out is that they actually hired less women.
Right.
So they brought back the gender cues in order to increase the amount of women that they were hiring at the company.
Right. Right. And exactly the same thing happened with, I believe, the New York Philharmonic. They said there were not enough minorities in the orchestra. And so they said, we're going to do blind auditions now. And they put up a curtain so the music players would be totally unseen, and they would have to be determined, you know, strictly on their music. And then they found that there were even less minorities after that. And then they said, we have to get rid of this blind audition. The blind auditions are racist now. Now we have to actually choose people on their race. I mean, it's completely nonsensical, isn't it? Is it hypocritical? Like, what is the right word to put to this, Zach? Because it's something demented, and I'm not sure exactly what phenomenon we're experiencing.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think hypocritical is the right word to use here. But another thing is that it's not like they're going to reflect and say, oh, it's our ideology that's wrong, right? Mm-hmm. Even when it's got contradictions in its face,
right?
They don't revise the ideology at its core. They just, you know, change the surface level window dressing in order to, you know, keep the ideology going forward. And, you know, this is what I saw happening at Google. And, you know, when I joined the company, I thought that it was a libertarian organization. It was like, hey, express yourself. We're just trying to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful. And as a libertarian or classical liberal, I was like, hey, that's sign me up. That's great.
Right.
I totally believe in everything about that. But, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, Donald Trump started surging in the primaries and became the Republican candidate. And the people at the company just started to freak out. And I didn't really understand what was going on because I personally don't have Trump derangement syndrome.
Right.
I don't understand how people can have Trump derangement. I mean, I kind of get it, but not really.
Right.
Like
intellectually you get it, but it makes no sense. So it's hard to fathom.
Right. And the media just shows itself to be such liars anyways. It's just like the liar calling someone else a liar. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's the media that's lied us into every single war in my history. And it was all on false pretenses. Like, look at it's like the people that drove us into the disastrous, you know, Iraq war twice.
Mm.
And the Afghanistan war were the ones that were complaining about Trump. It's like, I don't care what you guys have to say at all. You're murderers and thugs.
Right.
Right.
And that, but, you know, and that actually goes to explain why they would want to shut people like you up, why they want to shut people like us up. I mean, it's the same people manipulating the Google algorithm that are getting us into these wars. Same impetus, same, you know, volition that drives both these groups to do what they do. More on the other side. We're about to go to break. More on the other side with Zach Voorhees, his newest book where all of this is detailed, his escape from the cave of Google. Google Leaks, a whistleblower's expose of big tech censorship. You know, Google's motto used to be, don't be evil. Now their motto is, well, it's not that. I don't know what it is, but they changed it, and it's not that anymore. I guess what I'm saying is Google is evil. Google is evil. Google is evil. Where he reveals a bunch of powerful insider information about how Google deranks, deboosts, suppresses, shadow bans, and censors. And it's one of the most important topics that can be discussed right now. And yes, we can still discuss it right now because they don't have total power. I got to say, Zach, I'm blown away by how good the algorithms are. I mean, I don't understand it. To me, algorithm, like in a simple way, I can understand. It's like, okay, you have a word that they'll identify, and then they maybe cross-reference that from the source of the document or the source of the website and maybe give that a score and a ranking. Like, I understand it on a very simple level, but it seems like the algorithms know what to censor before any human could have had time to input anything, right? Like, yeah. how are the algorithms so good that they seemingly know, like, oh, it's a Hunter Biden story, censor this right now, when it's like, well, this story's brand new. There's no way anybody at Google could have learned about this, realized it was, you know, counter to their narrative, gone in and changed the algorithm. It must have happened organically within the algorithm. Can you just help explain how advanced these algorithms truly are?
Yeah, these algorithms are very advanced, Harris. And the way that it works is there's a specific type of AI called machine learning. And if you imagine all of your different types of AIs out there, like chess and checkers and whatever, machine learning is a subset of that, which is blowing up the artificial intelligence industry right now. And the way that Google was using it for censorship is that they were training what's called classifiers. And these classifiers were made by a process called machine learning fairness. Mm. Machine learning fairness creates a classifier for a specific social justice reason, and for other reasons as well. But the social justice are the ones that we care about. And the way that it works is that they've got training data. The training data are done by employees. And then this training data is fed through a machine learning process that tries and figures out what the patterns are. Mm. So if you imagine news articles, it's going to sit there and say, well, this news article is rated as hate speech. And so it finally figures out that it's, you know, because of, like, let's say Nazi, just to give an example.
Mm.
And so now that this classifier has been trained with a pile of data, it's then released upon new data, and then it's able to classify those.
Mm.
And now if you take that and you apply it to the transcript on your YouTube video, you know, now you can start to see why, if you have certain keywords that have been trained to be, you know, bad words like hydroxychloroquine or the Hunter Biden laptop, then when the AI program sees that, the transliteration of the transcript of your audio for YouTube, then boom, your video gets flagged immediately. And then often a human reviewer will go through and, you know, say, yes, the classifier got it right, or no, it did not. And then they continually adjust it. But they're updating these classifiers pretty much on a weekly basis, maybe even a daily basis. And it's something that they use in order to re-rank the entire internet. And this is how it works, through AI.
Yeah, it's incredibly powerful and incredibly impressive and kind of terrifying to know that that these machines are really making decisions by themselves. Of course, it all is initiated by humans, human input, and it will be over, you know, there's human oversight for now in these algorithms. But the machines themselves are making these determinations, and it's incredibly troubling that this is actually manipulating our perception of reality and therefore manipulating reality itself as we make decisions based on our perception. Now, your pinned tweet is very daunting. I'm very confused by it, and I'm hoping you can walk us through what these images are. What you say is, want to know how Google deranks, deboosts, suppresses, and shadow bans and censors you? Well, it's right here in my book, and of course, a link to your book, Google Leaks. But here's the images. Maybe you can just walk us through this. What are we looking at here as we look at the real-time hive mind scoring? What does this mean?
So what it means right now is that, okay, so there's a bunch of news stories. And what the Google system is trying to do is it's trying to pick out signals. So you could think of this as like a signals intelligence problem. And so what it's doing is that it's going through and it's trying to find relevant news stories on a particular topic. In this case, it happens to be Donald Trump. And what they're looking for are news stories that are extensions of previous stories that have come in the previous days. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to merge them together into a super mega large story. You want, I can go through some of these slides with my own monitor over here. You can kind of see that. Just go to the top.
Wow. And all this information is in your book.
Some of these slides are in the book. All the slides have been disclosed at ZachVoorhees.com. You can see it up here at the thing.
Okay.
But what they're looking for is they're looking for information out of the haystack, right? Needle in the haystack problem. And so what they're looking for is a trigger. In this case, it's the San Bernardino Fire Department tweets. And in this example, they're actually using Twitter to do the real-time analysis. And in this design document, they're saying that, well, actually, they don't want to use Twitter anymore. They've got so much access to their own data with news and their document searching or their search engine that they can actually just figure out where these spikes are happening themselves. And
right.
So this is an example of them indexing information as it's coming out in real time. In this case, you can see that they're using the this new story about Dominicans of Haitian descent tired of bias at the ballot box. What's really funny about all this stuff with Google is that they're really concerned about the election, not only in the United States, but different countries. And that kind of becomes like a revolving theme throughout these leaks, is that they're really interested in all these conflict zones.
Right, right. Well, because they're interested in control and they're interested in power, right? And they're interested in manipulating the will of people around the world. And
coming up next is Mike Lindell, interviewed by Alex Jones. And he talked about being sabotaged on his cyber symposium up in South Dakota, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, last week. And this is very, very important, so listen carefully. Here we go next.
I went out there and went after TrueNews.com. Now, I find out they're a great ministry, and I called up Rick Wiles, and here we both find out, we prayed together this morning, we were both set up. Our country was taken. We have 100% evidence that China used the Democratic Party, and the Democrats warned us of these machines. Alex, they warned us.
That's your biggest defense, Mike, is you have Democrats saying exactly what you said.
Right, 100% they're saying what I said. But now we have proof, 100% proof, of machines in Colorado or machines that we can say that. I'll bring it all out on your show tomorrow. If you go to crime.frankspeech.com, everybody, crime.frankspeech.com, and you're out there and you've been threatened, or you had evidence back in November, December of these machines or whatever, of this cyber attack, go there, fill out the form. We will get told you, my direct team, I will get your attorney. I will cover you. I will, just like I got Tina.
Wow, Mike Lindell's fighting hard. Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Central Standard Time, I'm here, your host, Alex Jones. And I am so excited about the guest we've got with us for the next few segments, Mike Lindell of MyPillow.com, a big American entrepreneur, thousands of American employees, making all these great products here in America, and sponsoring integrity in elections and sponsoring nationalism and patriotism. And so he had that big conference last week for 3 days, Wednesday, Thursday, or I guess it was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, up in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And I watched it and had all these scientists and engineers showing the algorithms, showing the proof, showing, you know, all this. And then the media focused on one issue with one file he was given that turned out was not an accurate file. But that's how they do it. But what I love is our listeners love Mike Lindell now more than ever. They get that he's a man in the arena. They get that he's somebody trying to figure it all out. We all saw the anomalies. We all saw the problems. We all saw in Michigan, everywhere, where Trump's way up here, and then right when they close things, boom, Biden comes up over it. We all saw that. And so when we investigate, we're going to go into all different areas. So Mike Lindell of MyPillow.com joins us Right now, he's also supporting the show. So promo code Alex at MyPillow.com. Great products made in America. That supports all the work we're doing. Mike, again, I think you did a great job at the conference overall. You're a man in the arena, as I said five times already. But describe the good, the bad, the ugly of the conference. And I'd like to get into all the big discoveries that were made and proven that got overshadowed by the media distracting onto a few things that weren't 100% basically manifest.
That I don't know what you're talking about as far as they focused on a bad file. There was no file focused on that I've seen, but let's do the good, the bad, and the ugly, and maybe that'll come up of what you're talking about there, because here's what happened. And I'm going to go do a timeline here. So I had my own team for 5 months, spent millions of dollars. This is people that white hat hackers from all different walks of life. I mean, they didn't know each other. I got my information and got all these terabytes from four different sources, by the way, including Dennis Montgomery. Everybody keeps attacking this Dennis Montgomery. I have validated his stuff's valid. Everybody, data is data. If you get it from the same place, PCAPs, just like the routers in Arizona, if they open them up, they would match. Everything matches. Like Alex says there, the experts I had on the stage, these guys now are scientists, physicists. One of them has 4 degrees. These guys didn't know each other either before this election. They're just doing their other job. They came together and showed the algorithms. All of this stuff matches. It's all the same. This was a massive cyber attack. It affected every single state. And so when I went to have this symposium, all I wanted was to take politicians from every state, which we had there, all 50 states were represented. I wanted to have cyber forensic experts there and breakout rooms the challenge was prove that this is not election data not valid data from the 2020 election. That's all they had. They didn't have time. It would take them months if I'd have gave them all the info, which I would never do, because they would. Well, I found out later it's a good thing I didn't do that. Well, anyway, here's how it manifested out. So then you have that, and then I have all the experts on the stage. And, Alex, I wanted to break through the media. Finally call out the media. You know, for 7 months now, I have been have to listen to to get my voice out there was all the left-wing media that attacks me daily. Well, that ship sailed now. Now we have voices like your show, frankspeech.com, all these voices out there that now we can just keep putting out the evidence and stuff. I have a show daily now at 6 p.m. Central Time on frankspeech.com. And anyway, here's what happened at the Cyber Symposium. So a couple days before, I hired a red team. And I didn't know what a red team was. So this red team comes in, and I give them a piece of the just 1 terabyte of the data at 9 p.m. on Saturday night. This is the 7th. Now, all of a sudden, I'm getting feedback from one guy on that red team. His name is Josh Merritt. Now, Josh Merritt turned out to be, he's a bad guy, okay? I think it's all over the news right now. He's the guy that went to the Washington Times and said that is false or whatever. He's also a guy that put put a PCAP into those rooms that was from Mesa County. So what you might be talking about there, Alex, is this guy.
Yes, that's what I was getting into.
Yep. He put a PCAP in there. Now let me tell you how the timeline, how we found all this out. So we get to go, and I'm going in that election room. Now my guy on my team, this guy, his first name is Conan. This is one of my guys I've had for 7-8 months. He was one of the guys that validated all the data, heck of captures I have. And so I had him and another guy named Todd. Those are the only two I had on my team from before that. The rest was this red team. Well, this guy on the red team kept saying, he's saying these things that didn't quite make sense in that room on Saturday of the 9th. I'm going, what do you mean? I've had this validated by everybody, by many, many people and spent millions of dollars. Now, we go to the symposium on the morning it started, Tuesday morning. The first thing Dominion did is they sued Newsmax and OAN because they were going to air Frank's speech or run it live for the 3 days. So they sued them. Then we get there, and there was attack on our software, the stuff, our servers and stuff for frankspeech.com. The live stream service, I had four backups. So they attacked this one, this one, this one. On the fourth backup, it held. This was 162 million attacks. I got that number from the cyber guys. Now we go through the first day, and we did a mock election, by the way. We did a mock election. A guy hacked into that with his cell phone, into the machines. He hacked into there in 5 minutes from this. So we had to restart the mock election.
I was about to say, that's what I'm saying. That was all really powerful. So much of it was really groundbreaking and amazing. But then the guy you mentioned was the one all over the news that was basically saying you had a fake packet of info and it was you. You're saying it's him.
So here's what happened. So the next day, now it's Tuesday or Wednesday morning. I'm going, I'm hearing all this stuff. Now he hadn't released that packet yet, but all of a sudden, there's an article released to the Washington Times with this Josh Merritt on there who says he's leading my team. He's not leading a one car parade. I mean, this guy was brought in. I just met the guy. And so he was putting us all this stuff out into these cyber break rooms. Well, then I told CNN, I said, you know what? There's some bad stuff going on here. I said, I'm not giving all this stuff to all you guys to bring out and make it, alter it or make it look bad in the press. I said, we're releasing stuff. And no, everyone there said, yes, this is valid data from the 2020 election. Now, Alex, here's what started happening. I flew a gal in, Tina Peters. We have 100% evidence now, and you might have seen this on the news. This was in Colorado. Dominion and the Secretary of State went in her office, and we have the before and after. They took all this stuff, and they're doing it throughout Colorado. So they found out that we had this. Now, when she came to the symposium, her office was raided. And they started putting all these false allegations about her out there. And it was horrific. Then, so we got her to the symposium. Well, then the next day, this is when it started happening. Another guy I flew in from Colorado, his house got raided with four little kids. They took all his electronics. Then I got physically attacked in the Sheraton Hotel, 11:30 at night. I get to my room. That attack's been out in the news. They said, oh, this didn't happen. This didn't happen. Trust me, it happened. I just got off the phone with the investigator. There were so many bad actors there. Then at 1 o'clock in the morning, I got a call from the head of the red team and he said, Mike, we've got a guy that someone's here that's bad. We found out it was, that Josh Merritt, but we didn't know if he was the one that planned it.
Sure. Stay there. Mike Lindell, hopefully you can do the whole hour. I want to hear all this. I want to go through the Colorado thing. I want to go through you being assaulted. I want to give you time. You're not in a rush here, unless you are, to tell people. Everyone wants to hear specifically how you got assaulted more. Stay there. We got to go to break. Waging war on corruption. Crashing to the lies and disinformation. Well, you talk about a spy movie. We were just talking to Mike Lindell of MyPillow.com during the break. He was describing it, and I know how he feels because I've snuck into Bohemian Grove. I've covered the black helicopters. I've been at all the big RNC, DNC events. And you try to tell people in just a few segments what's going on, and you can't do it because it's so real. And Mike Lindell's a lot like me. He's kind of stream of consciousness. He, like, remembers what he saw. He starts telling you. He's going to come back tomorrow in the fourth hour for a full hour. But he's got, like, dozens of lawyers right outside. He's got to go to an emergency meeting. He did get assaulted. They have the hotel footage. The Washington Post said it didn't happen. They have the proof. So he's just got to go through this. He's fighting back. That's good. I expected him to get attacked doing what he did. So in the 8 minutes we have left of this segment, Mike Lindell, you wanted to go back to Wednesday, the second night of the symposium.
Right. The second night. So after I got attacked, then I get a call at 1 a.m. by Colonel Phil Waldron. He was leading the red team. And he said, we have a report. There's going to be a poison pill. And he's giving me information. Now, I had to make a decision at that time. So I went back to my guy, which was Conan, and said, you know what? I don't want you to release any more stuff to that, to those breakout rooms, because I got to take this information with everything that's went on. And plus, this Josh Merritt had went public with all this disinformation that the data was wrong and all this stuff.
Well, so I don't know about Josh Merritt, but my concern was you're going to give everybody data. That's a classic thing, is somebody to put BS in the middle of it.
Right, and then what they thought is they would do that, then they would come in just like they did that guy. The house just got raided with four little kids. They took all his electronics. So I made a call, don't give them anymore. That's when we were going to really drop the China stuff. We had all these captures of where are the data where China did the attacks. Well, and then I asked him, I said, do they have enough in those breakout rooms? He said, Mike, they could look at that stuff for 2 weeks. We've given them, all this data from the 2020 election. That's what I wanted. And you know what? So we did that. We get through the third day, and it was so successful because all my things were accomplished. And then there was a bonus that it revealed all of this bad stuff. You know, all the bad people have revealed themselves. We're rewinding tapes. All the people that were there that have tried to suppress this, did these attacks, on the supposed.
You're saying the suppression of your event is the evidence of even more fraud because in live time it's a war game.
Yeah, 100%. And anyway, here's what we come out of this, where we leave this. All 50 states were ended up being represented. All 50. So they were all there and they're all bringing it back to their states and they're going, you know what? The data that I have, now remember everybody, I have all of the cyber data from the 2020 election in my possession. Okay. I'm not going to go give it. This is just a good example. I'm not going to give it to go validate this. It took me, six to eight people didn't know each other validating data and validating it. It took them 3 to 4 months. And I said, so these guys, there's no sense. I already know it's real. I'm putting that over here for the Supreme Court when we're going to get there. And here's what right now, what everybody learned. All of that data, I spent 2 months, Alex, with experts, for cyber experts, saying, what does this, all these packet captures and data, what did that manifest to? So we put up states. We put up all the states. I don't know if you watched that. It's on frankspeech.com right now. Shows what it did. That cyber attack, what it did to every state. Every single state was affected. So now every state has standing. Okay. 8 states were flipped from Biden to Donald Trump. My home state of Minnesota, New Hampshire, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada. But every other state, there was 1 million votes just in Texas. And 1 million votes in Florida. Those were the two most attacked states where they flipped. That's 1 million votes in each one of them states. Now we had experts on there that are scientists and physicists.
No, I saw them lay it out that was impossible. And as they described, it's like going uphill on cruise control. They ran out in Florida. They ran out in Texas.
That's right. And they showed how they used the 2010 voter rolls. That explains why it always bothered me, 20-some thousand non-residents that voted. Well, you know what, Alex? People are generally good people. 20-some thousand people didn't jump across out of Georgia or Nevada and say, let's go commit a crime. And I'm going, well, the reason, since they used the 2010 voter rolls, which we 100% shown there, Dr. Frank did, what happened was those people don't live in Georgia anymore. Or all these dead people that voted. That always bothered me.
They just use their names. But listen, what are you going to cover tomorrow? You do a full hour. So I'm looking forward to that.
We're going to talk about Tina Peters, all the stuff we have in Colorado that happened there, the cover up of Dominion, what they're doing now. They're going town to town, state to state. They're deleting stuff. This is the absolute biggest historical cover up to the biggest crime in history.
I want to thank you for listening to our show. I'm going to put click offs where you'll be able to hear the complete interviews that Alex Jones had with Mike Lindell. And we'll also put click offs in there for the other clips and so forth that we featured tonight. But thank you very much. Good night.